Hello, Autism Warrior, and welcome to Barefoot Autism Warriors podcast. I'm Ninka Benedict Mauritsen, and I am here to tell you that autism is a consciousness test, it's a wake-up call, and it's your chance to turn your life around. And when you do, everything changes.
How did this all begin for you?
Oh my goodness. So, well, over 2 years ago. No, let me start from the beginning. Okay, so when I first had the official school letter to say, when my son was three, my eldest, he's now seven, to say, choose your school, I felt sick immediately, and I did, and I just thought, I can't believe it's happening, and we have such a lovely life, and I just didn't, I felt 5 days a week, for, it was such a big kind of commitment, and I was going to miss him so much, but I very much at that thought felt that it was the done thing, we had to do it. So I was one of the annoying parents that went around seven local schools, and I soon realised that it wasn't the school's problem, like I didn't have a problem with the schools, it was the system as a whole that I wasn't kind of on board with. And just simple things like the reward systems that they have, we've never done that in our kind of parenting. The conformity, the kind of moulding children to, you know, this one size fits all approach was so against everything to me that felt natural.
Yeah.
So I started at that point, before he went to school, researching what were my options, what were the alternative schools, there's barely any in the middle of the UK, what were the private schools. They were too expensive, but also they were kind of the same. It was the same, it was still that education system, the issues that I had were still in place at those schools. And then it was actually my mother-in-law who said, why don't you home educate? You'd be wonderful at it. It's just continuing what you're doing. So I very briefly did a bit of research and I mentioned it to a few people I knew and everyone was absolutely horrified. You can't do that. They'll be freaks. They'll have no friends. How will they learn? So I was very, very weak and I sent him to school.
You did?
I did send him to school. and it was just awful. The settling in process was terrible and... You know, there was one day where I left him screaming and he gave himself a nosebleed and the teacher sort of dragged him away and said, he'll be fine, he'll be fine. Mm. And I walked away covered in blood. I looked like I'd committed an awful crime. I was crying my eyes out and I just knew there and then it wasn't right at all. So again, I continued my research but didn't have the courage to pull him out there and then. And I wasn't aware of the legalities around it, what it would involve, how I was going to juggle work, and what impact it would have on our life, and how he'd learn at that point.
Yeah.
So we carried on, and he did about 4.5 months, I think. And it was actually in the February of 2020 that we went, so just a few weeks before the lockdowns came in, we went for a parents' evening, and... The teacher was so lovely, she really was, but she's a teacher in the system, so there's only so much they can do. And she said, you know, he's top of the class in his literacy and his reading and his speech and his vocabulary is the best I've ever heard in 13 years. And he's such a bright spark and his maths, blah, blah, blah. But his writing is not good enough and he's middle of the class for writing and we need to get him to the top. Now, my husband and I walked away and... We just thought, he's 4 years old.
Wow.
Why does he need that pressure on him to write? And he could barely hold a pencil because he wasn't ready. And then, so that obviously made us feel really shocked at the pressure on him at 4 years old already, that he wasn't good enough because he wasn't top for writing. And he's four. It was ridiculous. So 2 weeks later, we had the lockdowns and things came in. And it was just like this weight off our shoulders. It really, really was. And we had our son back. And I know that sounds cliche and everyone does say that. But I think when he was at school, you don't just part with them from 8:30 till 3. You part with them from the moment you wake up because you don't have your connection, your relationship anymore. Because all it's about is I don't want to go to school or come on, you've got to get dressed, brush your teeth. Mm. Have you eaten enough before you go to school? And everything is about school from the moment you wake up.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then again, when you pick them up, everyone says this, that children, you ask them how their day is, they can't tell you anything. They're like these little zombies that have been so overstimulated, and this is obviously not all children necessarily, but it does seem to be kind of a common consensus. so overstimulated, and all he wanted to do was just crash out and watch TV and not really interact. And I guess when the lockdown happened, for us, it was being outside again. That was such a huge thing to us before he started school. And it was like a grieving process for me when he was at school, where me and his younger brother were going out on our daily walks. We go out in nature, you know, we live in the countryside. It's so important to us. And I just felt like I was cheating on him or something. I felt like I was betraying him that we were going to all these lovely places and he was stuck in a classroom, the same classroom every single day. And it just broke my heart so much. So lockdown, when it happened, we were outside constantly. And the conversation started to, you know, occur again. He's such a deep thinker. And we would just be chatting for hours out in the woods or by the river. And I realised there and then that the learning was just happening naturally through conversation, through exploration, through curiosities. And his thirst for learning was so huge that actually school was preventing him from being the person he was meant to be and also from learning. I'm going to get really emotional, sorry.
No,
I just found it. And it kind of really made me realise that I couldn't believe I'd questioned this way of life, like I wasn't able to do it, because actually now he was able to really learn so beautifully and naturally through just living naturally, living his life. So the school then very quickly, you know, threw out these homeschool timetables of what we had to do. And for example, it was for a whole week, their literacy was all about the gingerbread man. Now, I've never liked that story, neither have they. We love beautiful classical literature, we love stories, but that is such a boring story to us. I know, I'm sure some people love it. And it was just so boring. It was, we had to read it, try and get him to read it, and then, you know, work out what's the beginning, what's the middle, what's the end of the story, what are the characters. And I just thought, okay, what are the learning outcomes here? And let me do it our way. You know, we don't need to, we can go and sit by the, you know, by the river, read our own books and have those conversations naturally. We don't need to do it in a forced way that's so kind of prescribed, I suppose. Likewise with maths, the worksheets, oh my goodness, it's so boring. And he couldn't write, so he's very naturally good at maths in terms of doing, he loves times tables, he loves his sums, he's always had a good grasp of volume, measurements, telling the time, money. But for him, he was hating it because it was all about if he could write the answer to the... So he could whiz through, I could ask him these questions without, you know, what's 5 + 5? It's very basic stuff. He knew it immediately, but to write the number 10 would really stress him out and we'd end up in tears. And yet in schools, what I began to realise, everything has to be written. These children are forced to write so early because it is a mechanism of proof that the child is learning. But I didn't need that proof because I had conversation. And naturally for me, it's one-to-one time that teachers don't get that in schools. You know, that's not their fault. They've got a class of 30. But I don't need them to prove to me via writing the answers because we can just simply talk about it. And I can, through observation and through interest and conversation, I can grasp where he's at with things. And that it's just a natural process instead of a kind of inauthentic process of forced learning. So we've been officially doing it for 2 years now. And very quickly, I gave up on the homeschool things and said to them, I will show you what we're doing, but we're not following your way because we're actually ticking your boxes. We're going way and above and beyond your boxes without realising, I suppose. We're just naturally doing things. And for example, we would read Robin Hood, so beautiful classical literature, and they'd sit and listen. Read aloud is so important for literacy, for that vocabulary building. And then they might choose to read a few words themselves, but that's up to them. I would never pressure them. But in the stories, you then end up finding that you're talking about, okay, Robin Hood goes to prison, and the size of his cell was 6 by 6. So instantly we can get a tape measure out and measure out 6 by 6 and mark it out. So again, it's mark making, it's measurements. And we can stand in there, we can talk about his feelings of how he would have felt in that cell. So you're covering off so many subjects in a natural way that they are naturally interested in. And likewise, words will arise. They don't know, they don't understand them, and they feel they can say, well, what does that word mean? That's not necessarily the case for a lot of children in a classroom setting because of the embarrassment or, you know, that fear kind of based, you know, that fear in it. So I guess I soon realised early on that my three priorities for our day was play. Number one, play was everything. And number two was being outside, time in nature. And then number three was just reading beautiful classical literature. They were the three priorities. If we could do that every day, that was all that I, you know, that was my priority. Anything else was a bonus. So now 2 years on, it's much the same as that. And it's been beautiful to see the progression in them and their interests. My eldest is such a science, like, oh, he's obsessed with science. And he's always doing his own chemistry and his experiments. And then we carve out time, him and I, to do he's got like a monthly membership to this science, science membership, which is aimed at children that are kind of 10, 11 plus. But he's so, interested in it. And he's got all the kits and things that he sort of saved up for himself, selling his eggs to his hens. And the progression in, say, science for him, he wouldn't get that in school in primary because they don't. It's not a priority. The priority is very much reading, writing and numeracy. So I love the fact that he gets to dictate where his time is spent, and the progression in that is amazing. And the fascinating thing with my youngest son, who's only four, so he would be in reception, he's not had that interruption of school. So his process has just continued naturally, and it's just incredible. He's had no interference with his reading like my eldest did. So there's none of that, that phonics kind of teaching of drilling them in sounds and things like that. And there's no handwriting practice. You know, he writes, but I haven't in any way, got involved myself in that. He's naturally done that, and he'll ask for my help, and that's when I would get involved. So I soon realised that we were following naturally a philosophy, I guess, that people call unschooling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Heard of it.
Yeah, so unschooling, also known as self-directed learning, child-led, interest-led learning. And I was reading a wonderful book that I always recommend to everyone at the beginning, and it's The Call of the Wild and Free by Ainsley Arment. And in there, she's a beautiful writer, and she's also got a wonderful podcast as well about all home ed stuff, which I absolutely just absorbed over and over again during that 2020. And it's so encouraging, it's so inspiring, and it's just very much about treating your individual children as their unique beings, and finding ways for them, not what works for you, what you think. So I guess there's different ways we can home educate. And I say home educate, or homeschool is the term used in, say, America. In the UK, the official term is home education. And there's different philosophies around that. Many are eclectic, so we are to a certain point. But some are very much, for example, they homeschool or school at home. So they'll sit their children down 9 till 3, and they print off all the curriculum things, and they'll, you know, make their children follow that curriculum each day. So some people do it that way. And then there's other ways. The Charlotte Mason, I don't know if you've heard of that. It's very nature-based, a Christian-based philosophy. She's like a fascinating woman from the Victorian times. And some of what we do, I suppose, is very Charlotte Mason. We follow a couple of curriculums that are kind of Charlotte Mason. They're very nature-based. And by curriculum, nothing like school. It's very much like a seasonal pack. And it says each week what you could go and observe with your child. So you don't have, obviously, you don't have to do it. It is lovely. So, for example, we were doing bees because we found a dead bee, which you can see over there.
Yeah.
And then so you can get that out, and you follow like this lovely nature guidebook, and there's lots of book recommendations. There's art appreciation with it each week. There's often a piece of music or an activity to do. It's lovely. So that's sort of Charlotte Mason-y. People who follow Charlotte Mason probably won't like my description of it. But
so you very... also follow the Christian part of it, though?
No, not particularly. No. Yeah. We do talk about different faiths, but not. No, we don't. That isn't sort of our side of it. Like, we don't. We're more nature, definitely. Nature is very important to us. And then there's other things such as Montessori, which you've probably heard of, Waldorf, which is in our, in the UK, we have Steiner schools, so it's similar following to that. So I've taken different things and I've learnt different things about each of them, but very much followed a natural approach. And like I say, I just carried on doing what we've always done and then realised there was actually a label for it, which was unschooling. So I didn't kind of seek out a way of doing it. I was already doing it, and that it was very empowering to then realise that what I was doing was a thing, and there was loads of people out there doing it, and I've now got a wonderful community of like-minded people. So yeah,
okay, so
there's a couple of questions around that. So for example, the curriculum. In some countries, you're not even allowed to teach at home, and in other countries the rules are really strict about how to do it. How do you live up to that and test that they learn what the system wants to learn? Or is this also a rebellious act against the system? So how does that work out?
I've definitely met people who are anti-establishment. Mm-hmm. So they're purely, a lot of people doing it for that reason. That isn't my reason. But I do think there's huge flaws with the educational system. So it's not necessarily, that isn't my driving point, I suppose. But I'm just trying to think what you said now.
What kind of flaws?
Oh, and the curriculum. The law and the curriculum side of it. Okay. So in the UK, I'll only speak for the UK, because I know, for example, in America, different states do things differently. But in the UK, you're legally allowed to educate your child full time in a way that the I think the law states that so long as your child is getting a full-time education, mm-hmm. that is all that is required. Now in this country now, you have to have an annual check with the local council, so they will get in touch with you, and you can either do an annual report of your child's learning, of what they're, that could include photos. There are various templates for online and things that you can follow. Or you can do a home visit, or you can have like a virtual call. Now, each county in the UK is quite different. So there is, some counties are a lot tougher than others and not as understanding. And others are easier going or very kind of supportive of home education. Now, don't forget, for home education, people are doing it for very different reasons. So some people have felt that they've been forced out of school because their children haven't had the support they need, whether that's SEN or SEN, SEN, or whether that's their child's been bullied. So and they felt that school's not helped them, so they've taken their child out. And those people, the difficulty with that is they're not always doing it because they have a philosophy. They're purely doing it because they felt that they were put in a corner a little bit. So it's really tough for those people. Whereas other people are often doing it because of their beliefs. So they believe in a certain philosophy that the school can't deliver, the system can't deliver. And so again, however way you home educate your child, you will be ticking those learning outcomes off that the school curriculum needs, but you just might be doing it differently. So we do it very differently. So for us, we'll barely have any written evidence of what we do from the children's point of view, because, and I'm very honest with the home education, who I have to speak to, the officers, the support officers. Every year I say, that isn't something I'm forcing on my children. That's, for me, I want them to be self-paced because I believe in their individual needs. And that's the beauty of this way, is that your children could be classed as behind in school in certain areas, or, you know, very advanced in others in school. The beauty of this is you're not benchmarking your children ever. There is, people are scared that that's what the government want to eventually bring in. They haven't done that yet, and if they do, it will take a while, but I'm confident that won't happen to that extent yet. So at the moment, it's really only having to prove that your children are getting a good full-time education. And that is very simple to kind of prove, really. If you give simple examples of maths, reading, writing, that's all their priority is. They often want to know what kind of physical education they're getting, and then socialisation. They're kind of the main five things for primary. And if you're a literate family that reads a lot, that's already ticking one box. If your child can speak confidently and is enjoying just their interests, that's already ticking a box. So there's all these different simple ways of that, I guess, of proving it without having to do it the school way or following a curriculum. I guess the other thing is, I often say to people who are just starting out, if they're worried about that, because the curriculum frightens people, they think, oh, we must be, the school has the curriculum, so we must do it that way. I often say to people, and I do this at the start of the year, I go through the national curriculum and see what's expected of my children for that particular year out of interest. And I will see immediately that for some of them, they're way ahead. You know, some of the history we do is secondary school level, so I know I don't need to worry about that. And again, now writing is only one element of literacy. It's one fifth of literacy. The other four things, fine. That one's okay, classed as behind, but I'm not concerned about that because in his own time, he will get there. So if you go through it, you actually soon realise that you are meeting most of what is required of you. You're just not doing it in a forced, coercive way. Does that answer?
Yeah.
I don't know if that was very good.
Well, what about maths? Because math is something that many children struggle with. I did too, and my kids also. So one thing is now where they're small children. Yeah. What when they get older? And I notice in this country, it's almost like everyone needs to go to university, which it's never been an ambition for me, for my kids. I would hate if they did. But so how do they learn the things that you need to learn if you want to be a scientist or if you want to go to university? And what do you do with the numbers and maths?
No, I like this one. So I guess our way of doing it, which is interest-led, is the whole point of our way of life is that the children are interested in things and they get to pursue them for as long as they want. So they can spend 6 hours of their day pursuing science or reading or learning to ride a bike. And it's all about those building character and building skills that are going to help them in the real world. Now, maths fits into all of those things. Maths is often risk-taking, you know, working things out. It's, critical thinking.
Yeah.
Positional language, you know. So it's very easy that if you're just playing games like chess or card games, a lot of that is positional language. It's learning numbers. It's critical thinking. And again, there's all sorts of things naturally children. So, for example, my youngest has never had any kind of maths lesson. He's obsessed at the moment with sums. He's using his fingers all the time. Nobody's shown him that or told him to do that. And he's already working on double figures. And that's all just happened because he's playing football and he's scored 10 goals and daddy scored 12 goals. Well, how much is that? And he'll just work that out. And it all starts that simply, that early on. And it's similar with, say, geometry. You go out into nature and you're spotting shapes. You know, there's heart-shaped leaves, there's triangles everywhere. Then you start moving on to 3D shapes. And the children are leading this, and I am their supporter, their facilitator. I know that they had loads of questions yesterday about something. So I know tomorrow I'm going to get a few books out to read about that particular thing. So it could be shapes, if that's really taking their interest. We'll then draw different shapes, that sort of thing. Now, for example, money management is really important. And, you know, in school, in the younger years, it's often just, you know, on a piece of paper, what are these different coins and how does that work? Well, for us, the boys, they sell their eggs, they're working out sums, they're saving up for things. They'll go to the shops and they have some money each and they work out how much they can spend, how much they're going to need, how much they might need to borrow. And it's all using maths for real life purpose and realising that you need maths to actually get by in life. And likewise, algebra, that's often as simple as we're baking and, okay, we need 20 dates. How many have you got there? Okay, I've only got 8 dates. Okay, so what's the missing number? That's simple algebra. And it's like, oh, okay, well, we need 20. We've only got 8. Okay, so 12. And it's just simple things like that. And you just naturally find that they year on year are just building on that more and more and more. My eldest is just obsessed with times tables. I don't know why, because I've never said, let's learn times tables. But he loved, you know, counting in twos and fives. And then I think he was doing something in the garden, it was 7. So he started grouping 7s and things. And it's all just, it's maths in school is often fear-based. We fear it because we feel like there's only one answer. If we get it wrong, it's so embarrassing, we're going to be ridiculed. There is such a stigma attached to maths. And yet, actually, if we learnt it more naturally and how it is actually meant to be used, it's really not frightening at all. It's just really enjoyable. Now, in terms of when they get older, my eldest now is 7 and he's adamant he wants to be a scientist. And he does want to go to university because apparently he has to go to university to be a scientist. This is what he's been discovering and asking around. So for us, as self-directed learners, each year they're building on their own education. They are responsible for their education. And I am the person there to enrich it. And I would put experiences and activities in their way that they may or may not want, you know, they don't have to do those, but I take them places to really excite them about their passions. And then as they get older, and I've seen so many case studies of this, I've spoken to so many mums, I've listened to so many podcasts, these older unschoolers then are naturally, they want to be a scientist. Okay, so how do I become a scientist? It's no different. I want to learn to swim. How am I going to do that? I need to spend lots of time in the water. I need to keep practicing. I need to overcome my fear of going under. Well, it's no different. I want to be a scientist. Okay, I'm going to have to do 5 GCSEs in order to do my A-levels, in order to then go to university, if that's the route they choose. Now, we're creating passionate life learners. They don't see learning as something that inhibits them or is boring or is forced on them, because they're empowered with it. So they want to do something. They know to get there. They can get there, but they just have to work out their path and put the work in. But for me, a big part of this, I think it's total madness in schools, the pressure that are put on teenagers to do 10 GCSEs when they're 15, 16. Yeah. For us, we've met loads of home educators that their children are doing GCSEs at the age of 13, 14 in, say, science, because they're really passionate about that. The following year, they're doing maths because there's a theme here and they want to be an engineer, you know. And so they're going to, in their own time, pick up what is necessary.
Yeah.
And don't forget, my son's, he might want to be a scientist, but that might not be till he's 30. Mm-hmm. So he might go off and be a gardener for a while and do his GCSEs when he's 25. Yeah. And then his A-levels. Like, we're so fixated on this pressure, this time pressure, that these teenagers have to do, you're only going to be a success if you get through this year and do your GCSEs, and you're only going to be a success if you can do, you know, you pass these A-levels. Well, we're spitting out children at the end of the system, and I'm one of those, you know, I went to school. When suddenly we have to pick a degree, I don't even know why, for what I do now, I didn't even need a degree, although in this country it seems that everyone needs a degree, like it's just like annoying, one of those things. But you know, you go to university and the skills that you actually need just aren't there. University is very self-directed learning. Well, kids in school aren't given that because everything is spoon-fed to them. We want grown-ups in this, you know, we want these young adults to enter the world and have autonomy and have, you know, strong minds and a fierce kind of knowing of who they are and all this, and yet in school, they're not allowed to be any of those things. It's so, for me, the home education path is very much they, in their own time, they get to decide what they want to be. Now, I've somebody said to me before, what happens if they turn out to be absolute bums and just stay at home for the rest of their life? I don't think that's going to happen. They're not just going to sit around on the sofa for the rest of their lives. They're they're bright, sparky kids who love doing things. That isn't a concern of mine. But another thing I would say, just because your children go to school does not mean they're going to academically be a success. No. They're going to get those qualifications that school says is a must. So people think that we're taking such a risk by not doing the school path. I think the school path is riskier because not only are you taking that academic risk with school, it's all the other things that go with it. And for me, that's self-esteem and that's mental health and that's, you know, really being true to yourself, having that courage to follow who you are and not fitting a mould. There's all those things that with home education, I believe, isn't there. So for me, people are so fixated. One of the first things they say, what about GCSEs? That is so far from my concerns. And I know I've only got young ones now, but that's who knows where we'll be in that time. Like, I just very much prefer to live for the present now, enjoy it, keep thriving, and honour each of our needs and our interests. And we'll just see where that takes us.
Yes. And even so, for the moms who are listening to this, there'll be a lot of moms who've got kids with special interests that they struggle and grieve not being able to fit into a system where those interests are not met and they need to fit into a box. But this is a way where you can actually enhance these special interests. There are companies now that are just hiring autistic people with special skills. This is a way of doing that. One thing I was thinking when you were talking about social skills is, now I've got grown-up kids, I have seen what socializing means and has meant to their peers. A lot of drugs in the schools. Most parents don't know. This happens in schools when they're 15, 16. Yeah. They do drugs in school. Alcohol, cigarettes, bad food habits, wanting to fit into that kind of socialization. You also step out of that with what you're choosing.
Absolutely. And that's the irony of home education, I guess, the argument, the myth of the socialization. You know, that is the number one question you get asked. But what about socialization? And I believe that, you know, when I first started looking into it and all these people, the social freaks thing, they have no friends, how will they know how to communicate? It's just fascinating to me. School is so far removed from the real world.
Yeah.
You send your kids to school and they are stuck in primary with the same 30 kids every single day for how many years, from reception until year six. And they don't get to choose those children. And those children are all of the same age and often of the same backgrounds because they're coming from a certain catchment. So that, you know, they're often in the same sort of, where we are, it's very white middle class. That is all there is. And it's just fascinating to me that that is a rich and diverse way to socialise. Yeah. Like, to socialise is mixed ages. That is a big part of our life. It's going to see our 97-year-old neighbour and having fascinating conversations with him about the war or about his gardening or about the things we've taken him that we've baked, as well as the little two-year-old down the road who we'll have chats with. And we go to numerous groups and they're all mixed ages. Home ed groups are mixed ages, and it's just fantastic because the little ones can learn from the older ones, and the older ones also have to then have patience and compassion and empathy for the younger ones, and they have that mentoring role, but also the adults. So we have a wonderful Friday group that we've established now, and I think there's 9 families, and it ranges from babies all the way up to 9-year-olds. But the adults in that group are just as much a part of the friendships as the children are. We all interact with each other on the same level, and it's just wonderful. My kids look forward to seeing the mums as much as the children, and the conversations are just lovely. And so socialising is going out into the real world, experiencing different places and different people. And that's, you know, my kids have the confidence to go up to grown-ups wherever we are. You know, we went to Edinburgh Castle and they'll go up and ask, well, what's that cannon for? Why is that work? And often the people who work in these places are so fascinated by these children who will just are so interested and have the confidence to talk to them. They'll go and buy their own things in the shop. You know, my eldest has his own bank card now, so we can do the whole tap thing. It's very good. Like, he's very responsible with it. It's amazing. I wouldn't have been like that at his age. But, and he'll go in and discuss, you know, well, if that's 2 for 1, what, you know, with, like, it's just lovely.
Yeah.
And it's that confidence and that appreciation of different ages and different people and not having this fear of authority. You know, it's important that they, you know, if the police, for example, they can go, they will speak to police. They're not frightened of going past a police woman in the street or something. And likewise with doctors and dentists, you know, being able to communicate well. But it's the same, like, in, I guess, and that's what I think is hugely missing in schools. Socialisation is, it's not socialisation. They're only able to interact with one set of children. And the problem with that, as we all know, we often then get labelled, don't we, as certain things. And, you know, there's the clown in the group. There's the, I don't know, there's the geek who likes science, or there's the really clever one, or there's, you know, the person at the bottom. All these different things, or the adopted one, or whatever it is, it's always something. And I guess with this, our children are free to be, you know, express themselves and be who they are, no matter who they're with, and not having to kind of be, I guess, put in a box or anything. You know, they can just celebrate who they are, which I just think is wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's so awesome. Let's see, I got some questions here from...
There's a single mom who, she's got a 6-year-old, and there's a mom with twins who wants to start homeschooling, and a lot of questions about how do you get started. And with that, I would like to ask you, what are some of the worst parts of home education? Do you ever get bored?
Where do we begin?
I'm going to say I'm not the best person to talk to you about this, because I absolutely love this way of life. Yeah. And I do have friends that do struggle more. But honestly, I can, hand on my heart, say that I never once regret this decision or say that I'm going to send them back to school, anything like that. I guess what I'm pregnant at the moment, so I'm nearly 13 weeks pregnant, and I have had the most horrendous first trimester, so that has been a massive, massive challenge. So I do think, you know, it's often the mums who take on this full-time role, really. And if you are faced with any kind of health condition of any kind, morning sickness in my case, which was all day, you know, all day and night sickness, or I had a car crash at the end of last year and I really hurt my back. So that affected our, you know, my level of energy. And so I guess I found that frustrating more, because I'm so involved in the children. You know, we love going out and I climb the trees with them and we're running and chasing. So when I can't do something like that, which is normal for us, that's a challenge for me. It's more when I'm, yeah, I guess, knocked off my normal kind of energy. But I would say it's all about how you engineer your life. And for us, a big part of our life is connection. We have, you know, if the boys ever, whatever I'm doing, if they want a hug, we stop and we have a hug, and I will drop anything for that. And we have those long conversations. That's always a priority. And we do lots of reading together. But also, they have independent time. That is so important. I've always instilled that. There's something called strewing, which people can look up if they've not heard of it. And they're probably already doing it without realising, which was me when they were tiny. And it's all on Pinterest, which is where people get the ideas. But, you know, setting out, if you really need to get the washing done, you can set out just a load of bowls of water in the back garden or something, and scoops, and they'll just play with that for ages when they're little. So it's things like that, I guess, that encourages them to have some open-ended play on their own without you always being there for them. So I think that's really come into its own when I've then had health issues where I've been really challenged and I've been stuck in bed, and it's things where they've had to go and just have that independent time together or play and understand. I think when you have a strong connection, you have those conversations about hormones or feelings or sickness. You know, I've taught them through the whole process of the pregnancy and how this is really hard now for them to understand that I'm not able to be, you know, all myself, bring myself to every day. but that's only for a short space of time. And it's just having those. And it's the same, I said to a friend recently who's been really struggling with hormones. I said, have you discussed that with your children? How, what our hormones do and how they work and how that can affect us? And just, you know, just as you would with a friend, I suppose, it's no different. It's having, you know, those conversations, isn't it? So they can understand that. So that's what I would say in terms of trying. I also think most of the people I know who find it challenging or overwhelming at times, some of them have major overwhelm, I won't deny that, and that is because they're just taking on too much.
Yeah.
Their expectations are crazy high and it's so unnecessary. I think a lot of parents, particularly when they've pulled their kids out of school as opposed to just never doing school, they come out and they're so obsessed with the curriculum. They're so obsessed with the benchmarking or making their kids do like maths every day and the kids don't want to do it. And I think it's having that courage to really embrace this way of life. And it's, yeah, I think it's just stripping away some of the things that you think are important because they're just probably not. And that it's, and yeah, so in terms of starting out, I think it depends if you're doing it from school or not. So if you deregister from school, there's a term called de-schooling, which I really recommend, you know, looking up and researching. And that's basically allowing your child, when you've pulled them out of school, to have some complete free time, complete pressure off, and letting them just find their interests. It's amazing how many mums have sort of come to me and asked my advice and said, I've pulled my kids out of school and they're just not learning anything. They're not interested in anything. They don't want to do anything. And it's just such a curious thing because I don't know what they like. I don't know what they're interested in. But I think with that, as I always say, is well, ask them, give them the time, observe them, play with them. And you will, you just explore, go to places. There's some wonderful like documentary type things, to, you know, to get like Horrible Histories for us was just fabulous in terms of my eldest, his knowledge of history is incredible. So that was really wonderful for him to bring a lot of the reenactment to life and things. We've then gone to a lot of wonderful like historical places that are relevant to the stories we've read and things like that. And I just think naturally they will come out, that, you know, the children will, you'll naturally just suddenly see these interests unfold. But you have to give them time and let them find their way. I think parents often feel like they have to start teaching them. Or I guess, and you have to then question, well, why have you pulled them out of school if you're just only going to do that now, you know, do the same at home? I think it's courage and know that you've got all the time in the world. That is one of the things, you know, we have a 14-hour day. You know, there's a lot that can be achieved in that day, and that might just be lying by a river and looking at clouds. You know, it's there's different things that are, what is valuable to you. And I think that's one of the biggest things is, number one, why do you want to do it? What is the real driver behind it? Is it your child has specific interests, like you said, or they're very, very interested in certain things that they just wouldn't get in school, or they need a lot more quiet time, or they get overstimulated. There's different reasons, isn't there? And again, if you've got more than one child, it's not letting the younger ones fall into that as well, as in don't just assume that your younger one will need to do it the same as your older one. It's my younger one likes doing little workbooks and doing things with me, you know, he loves little mazes and writing activities in his magazines. My eldest isn't, not a chance, like that is not his thing. He's very independent, he wants to do his very hands-on practical. He's always listening to audiobooks, classical, Lord of the Rings, you know, and The Secret Garden, beautiful, beautiful things. And the knowledge he gets from that is just wonderful, but it's so simple. Mm-hmm. It's not forced, in a, you know, forced learning. So, yeah, I think it's definitely questioning why you're doing it and having the courage to follow that through and not fall into the trap of what we should be doing.
Yeah. I love all this. This is so useful, so inspiring. I wish I'd met you when I was younger with my kids. One question from a mom who's in the UK. It's different from country to country, but definitely it seems like there's a move towards banning it or making it difficult for moms. What do you think about the new bill that's being launched here in the UK? I think it's in the House of Lords now. Have you got thought about how it might impact you and your family?
Yeah, I think basically how it's always worked in the UK is when you get your school letter for your child, which everyone gets, there's tick boxes on there of what school you want to apply for. There is no tick box to say, I'm going to home educate. So often, this is how ridiculous the administration of it all is. So, for example, with my youngest, I just ignored the letter because there's nowhere on there for me to say home education. So for years and years and years, and still now, kids have been, parent families, home educated families, have been flying under the radar, if you like. So they've never been picked up. They've not applied for a school, and therefore they're just not in any kind of system. Now, what the government wants to do is bring in a named register of all home educated kids. So they know how many are home educated if they've been at school. So my eldest, he went to school. We then had to deregister him. So all you do is you email the school and say, we've decided to home educate. Please, can you remove us from the roll? They then get in touch with your local education authority, the local council. And they then get in touch with you to say, okay, so you're home educated now. Can you tell us a bit more about your philosophy, why you're doing this, how you're going to meet their needs? And then you're then in this annual checkup of sending a report or whatever. Now, my youngest this year, because it's post-COVID, there's been such a huge drive in numbers of home education. I did get a call about him, and that's fine. I'm very happy for him to go on the register. But it's quite ridiculous that up until that point, if you don't do school, there's no responsibility on you to put yourself on that list. And a lot of people don't want to do the annual report because much of what they're doing is, well, why is it up to you to tell me whether I'm doing a good job? How could you possibly know that in a report or an annual 1 hour conversation? And there's different people. Some people are very anti it and some people have no problem with it. They're happy to be on it. Now, the new schools bill now is going to say that everyone has to be on it. So it's your responsibility as the parent to inform the council that you have a child and they're home educated. Now, the argument the government is having, or stating, is that it's a safeguarding issue. So that's their number one kind of thing, is that they don't want these ghost children, they're called. So there's been various awful stories, hasn't there, of children. They've been, you know, horrendously abused or even died. And they've been classed as ghost children. They've just, like, disappeared. But statistically, most children who need the safeguarding are actually at school. So don't forget, home education is a tiny, tiny minority still. But that's their argument, which many people believe isn't a good enough argument, because up until the age of five, there's no safeguarding. So you could be doing anything with your children up until the age of five, and then suddenly, why is it that at the age of five onwards, there's a safeguarding problem? And then likewise, I forgot what I was going to say now. Sorry. Anyway, so I think what people are concerned about is once they've got this register, the next step, I think, that it was stated is that the councils can have a bigger responsibility to make sure that these home educated kids are getting a full-time education. Now that is very vague, isn't it? What does that? And so for some who are ex-teachers, for example, who are assessing you, they might not believe in our unschooling philosophy. We've been told not to even mention unschooling to council because they just don't understand it. But it really depends on your relationship, doesn't it? So I have a very good relationship with our local authority. So I happily talk them through what we're doing, and we've had wonderful reports back of what we're doing, and they're very supportive of that. But I guess it always comes down to the argument of there will be kids that are taken out of school or never go to school who are just sat watching TV all day and their parents aren't parenting in any kind of shape or form. And unfortunately, those children are then put in the home education minority, which is very different from what we're doing. We are educating. We're doing it because we want to home educate. We're not doing it because we don't really want to parent. Yeah. It's just very, very controversial. And I guess the argument with a lot of the kind of old school home ed kind of community is that once they get this, what's next? Will they then start bringing in, for example, the certain states in America where they do annual assessments on children to check that they're, you know, they are where they should be. But that's, I think that's a long way off, if at all. I really do believe that, and the more I've read about it, I do think this register will come in. Many people say, what's your concern with the register if you've got nothing to hide? Which I have no problem being on the register, but for others who are anti-establishment or who do believe in their own freedom of rights or whatever, they don't want to, and there's very different kind of thoughts behind it. But it doesn't frighten me at all. However, I have said if they banned it in this country, we're moving countries.
My husband,
like we've discussed that if they ever did, and I honestly don't think that will happen. Home education in this country has been going strong for a long time. But I think there's that fear of whether they'll start to try and assess it more in some shape or form, which would be really sad, because when you're sat, you know, the whole point of this is you have individual children, you want to give them an individual education. And most of the home ed kids, well, all the kids I know that are home educated are having the most wonderful education. So it's really sad that something could be imposed on them, but it's the way of the world at the moment, isn't it, with everything, unfortunately. But it wouldn't put me off choosing to home educate at all. And don't forget, all those benchmarks are in place in school anyway. So, and you have all the other things of not being able to take them out to go on a lovely family holiday or to go on a learning educational trip. You know, you can't do any of those things when they're in school. So there's still way more pros to choosing this than there are cons. So,
thank you.
Okay.
What about screen time and phones? Because it seems to steal creativity and initiative out of these kids.
Well, the interesting thing with unschooling is, so some unschoolers believe because your child is responsible for their learning, and by that, I know that sounds quite heavy. Obviously, we're there to guide them, but we want them to feel empowered by what they're doing. But it's also very consent-based, and you're giving them choice, and you're respecting their needs and things. So some believe you should let them have as much screen time as you want, and some of them are called game schoolers, where they literally let their kids play games on the TV or whatever. I mean, I'm not into it, so I'm not using the right terminology. Now, that isn't my thing, but I think that depends on what you've exposed your children to. So my kids don't even know about Minecraft and things like that. And I'm sure that there are learning elements to it. There's no doubt about that. I know kids learn a lot from that. But for us, it's just not a priority to us. It's being outside, it's moving our bodies and all of that. So screen time, the TV for us has been wonderful, because we've used it for documentaries and things. So for me, I worked in children's TV for about 3 years, and it was for CBeebies kind of, CBeebies and then CITV, whatever. But with that, I understood what kind of was involved in it, and the educational kind of guidance and all of that, all the tick boxing that had to happen. So I've always had quite good faith in that side of it, but we've never just let our kids just have a free-for-all on Netflix or YouTube or anything like that. That just frightens me a little bit. Yeah. But I'm not against that, and most kids I know do that. But for us, it's more, I guess, using it for our interests. So there's no denying YouTube has wonderful things, videos on there for like volcanoes exploding and historical reenactments, things like that. So it definitely for us has a place, there's no doubt about that. And we love all the David Attenborough nature programs, like I said, Horrible Histories, and there's some like alpha blocks and number blocks for the younger kids, which has been, you know, a nice, I guess, something that they've enjoyed, but it's just not a big part of their life at all. It's not in a day, sometimes in the morning they might have a bit, but it's often they would choose not to, but they have choice. So when we wake up in the morning, we always say our mornings are for us to kind of wake ourselves up, ease into the day however we feel. My husband goes for a run or goes on his bike. For me at the moment, it's just lounging in bed, having a bath. And then the boys are often either, they're mostly constructing, or they might watch a bit of TV on something that they're, like they Hetty Feather or some Victorian programmes, but they mostly want to be outside. So we don't have it in the day. But again, I guess I say this in a, there is no, we don't have arguments about it, but I think that's because we've always done it this way. It's a bit like food. We've never really had picky eaters, and I don't want to judge because I know people say, well, you maybe you're just lucky. But I think we've always introduced our children to a healthy relationship with it. And I think that's the same with TV, food. It's how you, from the very beginning, those early journeys with it, of how you use things, isn't it, and encourage and have conversations around it. So it is part of what we do, and we love watching films. Well, you know, like The Secret Garden, we loved reading that book together, and then we watched the film. But it's not a heavy, I guess it's there, but it's not a big part of their day, I suppose, at all, yeah.
And I know people will ask, how do you finance this? So how do you make enough money for this dream? Because it is a dream for many to become a reality. And then what do you do if a child doesn't want to be homeschooled and they're asking to go back to school?
Good questions. Okay, so the finance thing's a big one. And a lot of, I often get single mothers messaging me saying, I really desperately want to do this, but how am I going to, you know, how can I make it work? Now, I think in every situation is different, so I can't talk for everyone. And I don't know what everyone's needs are. I mean, for example, I asked this question on my Instagram over a year ago. I said, if you could afford to, would you home educate? And it was about 40-60, 40 saying yes. Now, some of the people who answered that, I do know them. And I do know that they live in amazing, big, beautiful houses. They go on lovely holidays and they have lovely cars, for example. And actually, it's that balance, isn't it, of sacrifice and what you're willing to sacrifice. That is a big thing. Now, with us, my husband works full time. He's very fortunate. He loves his job. He's done well at it. But I also freelance still. So, again, when I was... I always knew I wanted to have children, and I always knew I had to build a career that was going to get me that freelance element where I could have flexible time. When I grew up, my mum worked full time. She was a single mother, and I never really saw her. Mm. And from I was out at childminders early morning and picked up late, I was in the after school clubs. I knew that I couldn't be that mum to my children because I knew how it felt for me. So I knew that I had to have a freelance career. So my freelance career now, I'm fortunate, I've been doing it long enough that I earn a good day rate. That's really obviously helpful. And I could fit it in around, you know, I often have got up at 6 in the morning. My husband can start at 9. I can get 3 hours in before he starts. And then again in the evening, I could do another 3 hours. So I can kind of get a day done quite easily, flexibly. And again, I can work at weekends. Now that's obviously if you've got a flexible kind of career. I think quite a few people I know have set their mind to home education for whatever reason, and they've had to build up to that, so it's not been immediate, and they've had to decide, okay, how can I make that work? So it can be sacrificed, can't it? You can downsize houses. We've always said if we had to, we would 100% do that. There's just no way we could put them back into school. We would downsize. Or like I say, there's people who have then quit their jobs to start a freelance career, or start the freelance career and then quit their jobs in order to have that flexibility. Now, the other thing I would say, it really depends on how old your children are. So my eldest is 7 now, and he's very mature for his age. I could quite easily do a few days worth of work around him, and he'd be busy with projects and I could tap him, but that's only if you can work from home. So it's really dependent on, but if you've got little ones, it's pretty much impossible, as most people know, in COVID. So I think the main thing is weighing up the, you know, in terms of you're allowed to have childcare, which most people don't realise for home education. They think they're not allowed to ask for any childcare. Now, you are actually allowed to have childcare. I think it's 3 days worth a week, which I think it's 17 and a half hours or something. So there are loads of wonderful kind of forest school places around now. There's home educating childminders around that can do 2 or 3 days a week to help. Again, that's a cost, but it does mean you can carry on working. And there's also grandparents. My boys go to their grandparents for half a day every week. And then they're at a group in the morning. There's lots of home education groups where you can drop your children. And then there's also, I haven't done this yet, but it's with other friends. They do day swaps where they go to work and, you know, their kids go to another home ed family and then they do swaps and things. And So there are different ways to do it, but it's very difficult to, everyone's circumstances are so different. And some people will say, I couldn't possibly do it. And like I said, they've got these big houses and things, and so they could. But then there are genuinely people, I've got a friend who I went to school with, and she's a single mum, and she has a freelance career, but it's late nights, and, you know, it's very tricky. She is so desperate to do it, and she's just trying to work out, okay, can she rely on certain family members to have him certain days to try and make it work?
Yeah.
But it's not easy for everyone.
No. And what about if a child doesn't want to be at home? And that might come and go, so...
Yeah.
So how would you deal with that?
I think, again, it really depends on the circumstances of why you're doing it. For us as interest-led unschoolers, the boys have so much freedom. They're doing such fun things all the time. You know, I often check in with them and say, you know, well, they, because my eldest will still see his friends from school, and they've got a lot of friends who go to school. And they might ask about school, and I say, you know, is it something that you think you might want to do? And they're always like, no way. You know, my eldest often, like once a week, is like, I've got the best life. And they know how fortunate they are and things. And they often say, my friends don't like school. Why can't they be home educated? And I have to have that conversation of not everyone wants to, not everyone can. Their parents have to work, whatever it is, it's different things. But it's, I guess... For me, it's always giving them choice and freedom. And like I say, they're very much in control of their lives to a certain point. We're obviously here to guide them. I don't just let them do what they want. But if it is something that they would want to do, I would find it very difficult because I am so far down this path and believe so strongly in this way of life. And I have so many concerns with the education system. I would find it very difficult, and I would have those conversations with them, but ultimately it is their choice. So if they do want to go for secondary school, I would always let them try it, because it's incredible how many home ed kids, I don't know if there is a statistic, to be honest, but they do want to try secondary school, but they rarely last the year, I think, because they realise actually what they have at home is pretty great. And often I think that is with my eldest, he's tried school. He also speaks to his friends, and they say how they're stuck sat at desks all the time having to do things that they don't want to do. So he's very much, I'm not doing that. But it really depends, doesn't it? Because I suppose if your child isn't getting the support in terms of education development support at school and they want to go, that's hard, isn't it? Because so I guess it just is case by case on that. And also questioning why they want to go to school. Is it because they're not having social stimulation? And actually that's something you need to provide for them, help them with. That is one of the things when you're starting out, is I think quite a few home ed mums that I've met, they say they're introverts. They don't really like socialising. They haven't got many friends. But their child might not be. So it's so important. And I've really, that was one of the things for me, mainly because my husband's main concern was them not having enough friends or not having enough groups and clubs and things. So for me, I've really put myself out there, and I've created this Friday Nature Adventure group, we call it, and we all meet in the woods every Friday, and we've built that, and it's wonderful. And they go to other groups, horse riding, we've done forest schools, all these things, and we've really had to put ourselves out there to make, you know, make those friendships or find those people that you have connections with. I think that's really important, and whether their interests aren't being fulfilled at home and what you can do about that, you know, they're interested in, you know, you hate maths. They love maths, so you're probably not doing enough maths, you're doing more arty stuff, and that isn't them. So it's okay working out how you can, you know, talk to them, find out what it is about their life now and school that is missing, I suppose.
What a lovely, lovely way to end this conversation. I mean, it's just incredible. All the questions that I have is actually stuff that you've answered yourself, and I guess it's because people have been asking you questions all along. But I was just wondering, is there anything here that you would like to just end by saying you wish you'd known before you got into this? So if someone's out there considering this, is there anything that you wish you had known that you can pass on to them? You covered most of it, I think.
I think the biggest thing for me is not about the home ed journey, but about the school journey that we had. I've got my own podcast, and I do one of the episodes is about our school journey, and it's been very emotionally received by people, because I think a lot of people have gone through this a similar experience, and it breaks my heart that I sent my son now. He wasn't ready at the age of four, and also it's just it wasn't for us as a family, our whole philosophy and things. And I just now the person I am now is I'm just completely different to who I was then. I was so bothered about what everyone else thought, and almost like a shame attached to not doing school. And recently I've been saying how I guess it's embracing what's natural to you as a mother, as a family, each of your children, as opposed to doing what's normal for the masses. It's so easy, isn't it, to get swept away in what everyone else is doing. And there's that fear of, well, if everyone's doing it, it must be the right thing. Mm-hmm. And it's actually quite frightening when you realise that is the case. And instead, I just wish I'd had the confidence in myself to never have even done the school journey at all. I felt I had to try it, and we might not be here today if we hadn't, to be honest. I think my husband needed to see it as well. But I think it's definitely embracing our life for what it is and really celebrating it and not being deterred by other people. The hardest thing most people say with choosing to home educate is the friends and the family who are just so against it. And it's so heartbreaking. And I think it's just having the courage to know that you're doing what's right for you and your children, and it just doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. And I know that's so easy to say, but it is so true, and they will soon see the fruits of what you're doing. And they can come and join you and celebrate in what you're doing and embrace it and support you. And if they don't want to do that, then that's their choice. You can't convince them of that. You know, you can't change their minds if they don't want their minds to be changed. And often that's driven by so much hurt themselves or inner things that need working out that they're not even aware of. But I would just say, don't worry about trying to convince them. Don't stress about that, and just say to them, I'm here when you're ready to join us on this wonderful journey, but I'm going to have my space for me now, because I'm not having anyone, you know, rain on my parade. That's one of my favourite songs. And I always say, I can see now why, because I just don't let anyone rain on my parade. And I've had to be quite strong on that, I think. I've really taken space from certain people who aren't bringing a healthy and positive vibe to our life, because it's our life, and it's not just an education choice, it's a way of life. So if you can't get on board with that, then maybe you're not part of this life right now. And I think that's the main message, really.